Well, good morning, everyone. We're delighted to see all of you here. We got several visiting with us, and we're glad you're here. And if we don't know you, we want you to hang around and let us get acquainted a little bit here. I want you to remember that reading. Just kind of keep that tucked back in your mind. It seems a little strange, but apparently the Corinthian church had something of a problem with jealousy and envy and rivalry and competition. Here's our dysfunctional family again. They're just such a happy bunch. I want to see them every Sunday, don't you? They just look like they're having a marvelous time, and apparently the Corinthian church had problems with all these competition and rivalry and jealousy, and that makes that then a dysfunctional family of God. The church is the family of God, and I recognize that right off because, here's why, because there's actually another dysfunctional family in the Bible that you can read about back in Genesis chapter 37. I want you to go with me to Genesis chapter 37 this morning. We're going to talk about Joseph. Joseph is a part of a really dysfunctional family. Now, in order to appreciate everything that goes on in the life of Joseph, we kind of need to back up and look at his family, because have you ever noticed that families tend to pass these ideas down generation to generation, You have the same family traits that you see come down generation after generation. Well, here's Joseph's background, and you just got to think about his family, first of all. You got Jacob, his father, who deceives Esau, his brother, to cheat him out of his birthright and the inheritance, and so he takes care of that. Then he cheats his father, too, Isaac, so there's a lot of deception and competition and rivalry going on there. And then Jacob, in turn, is deceived by Laban, his father-in-law, and he's given Leah as wife first, and then Rachel second. So these girls, Rachel and Leah, both come from a family that's involved in competition and rivalry and a lot of jealousy, and they themselves are very jealous of each other, and they competed for Jacob's attention and affection, and so you have this incredibly fouled-up family where you have these messages of competition and rivalry and jealousy and envy going back and forth and back and forth and all of this. And they even drew in their servants, Bilhah and Zilpah, into this. And so there are more children born. And it's all in this terribly poisonous atmosphere that Joseph is the favorite kid. Isn't that marvelous? You know, here you are, passed down generation to generation, and Joseph is absolutely the favorite kid. Now, the story of parental favoritism really strikes a chord in us because it is a very, very common story. Cornell University study indicated that 80% of mothers admit to having a favorite adult child. 80% of mothers admit that. And then, y'all remember the Smothers Brothers? Yeah, the Smothers, Tommy and Dickie Smothers. Okay, everybody who remembers the Smothers Brothers, I want you to relax just for a minute. I need to talk to people who've never heard of him, never heard of these guys. There were these two guys, and they were very, very funny. And they were very musical as well, and they put out what's called a record album. Now, a record album is a round black plastic thing about this big, and it went around in circles with a steel needle that bounced up and down on it and made music. That was before CDs and iPods were invented. So this is an album cover. They used to have art on them and everything. Anyway, one of their taglines, these guys would always say, you know, Mom liked you best. Y'all remember Tommy Smothers saying, Mom always liked you best? And, of course, the album cover's great because you got Dick Smothers over here with all the toys and Tommy's there with his pet chicken. Mom always liked you best. I don't know. You know, it's funny because there's an element of truth to it. There often are favorite children in the family. And this family therapist, Judith Duke, says that the favorite kid in a family has one of two reactions to this. One reaction is that the kid feels guilty, because kids understand fairness. And when they realize that they're being treated very unfairly, and the other kids are being treated unfairly, they don't like that. It makes them very uncomfortable, and they personally feel guilty about being the favorite. The other thing that they do is they become a bully, because whatever they do is right, and the others are always wrong, so they can go and do whatever they want to. And boy, if they get called on the carpet by the other kids, Mom and Dad's going to come rushing to the rescue there, so they can just do whatever they want. And they become bullies at this. And that seems to be Joseph. Joseph has become a bully. Go take a look at Genesis chapter 37 with me. Just look at verse 2. Just verse 2 here. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them.
Dad, you know what those guys did?
And he is going to be protected by Dad because he's the favorite. And it seems like he's just become a bully here, just pushing them around, trying to get his way all the time. There's all this competition and jealousy that goes on. And we could say an awful lot about Joseph, but I really want to focus on the competition and the jealousy that is so obvious in his family. See, Joseph was gifted by God, and he bragged about it. Joseph was gifted by God, and his brothers hated that. All of them misunderstood the nature of God's gifts. They didn't understand what was going on at all. God gives us gifts in order to serve Him. So no matter what our gift might be, no matter what it is, we're called to use it in service to God. That's what Joseph didn't yet understand, and that's what the brothers didn't yet understand, but that's what we need to understand. No matter what the gift is that we may be given, we're called to use it in service to God. So, I want to read a few verses in Genesis chapter 37, and we're going to notice some really important lessons about the use of God's gifts and the nature of those gifts as well. First of all, let's take a look at the first 11 verses of the chapter, Genesis 37, verses 1 through 11, and just realize that God's gifts are given to us for us to serve, not to be served. That's not our responsibility. Let's just read the first 11 verses together. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. The thing about that, sometimes it's translated a long robe with sleeves, sometimes it's translated a coat of many colors. The point is, it's something really, really special, and you can't work in it. You just don't work in clothes like that. So that's a double badge of honor, because not only is Joseph singled out as the absolute favorite, everybody knows he's not going to work very hard because he's wearing his good clothes all the time. Verse 4, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. I need to point out to you that this could actually legitimately be translated that his father loved him more than all of the others put together. He's saying something very powerful about the status of Joseph in this family. No wonder his brothers hated him. Verse 5, Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he'd said. Are you starting to see a pattern develop about the boys hating him? I mean, it's brought up like 7 times in this section. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. Listen, he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. See, Joseph had a gift. It was a gift given by God. And the gift was to know the future. He didn't know everything about the future, but apparently he was given to know some things about the future. This is a gift that is given to him from God. He had some kind of special dream It's really hard. It's hard for us to imagine the impact that this had. We've all had kooky dreams, right? How many of you had a kooky dream last night? Yeah. We've all had these nutty dreams that seem so real. But there's something about these dreams that set them apart from other dreams. And so this isn't just some nutty kind of disjointed crazy dream. This is something that Joseph realizes is a message of some sort. It's coming from somewhere, and I don't know who's giving me this message, but somehow this is important. And so he tells this message because his future looked so bright. He's going to be bowed down to by his whole family. It looks so good for him. And so he bragged about it, and they hated him because of it. It's interesting, in verse 11 there, it says that Jacob kept this matter in mind. See, Jacob had had a dream once, too. He dreamed about a ladder that stretched all the way up into the heavens, and he saw angels ascending and descending on that ladder. And God spoke to him in that dream, and everything God said came true. So Joseph has had a dream. Jacob doesn't like it, but keeps it in mind because he had a dream one time too. See, God had a reason for providing that gift to Joseph. Now, Joseph is only thinking about himself. This is a really neat dream. He's only thinking about what it means to him. And guess what? The brothers are only thinking about what it means to Joseph too. And they hate it. But the reality is, the gift wasn't given for his benefit. It really wasn't about him. He wasn't ready to accept that yet, but it really wasn't about him. Now, the reason that this is important to us is because we are given gifts, and the gifts are given to us to serve the church. Okay? If you go over to 1 Peter chapter 4 and just take a look at verse 10, Peter points out this very fact in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 10. He says, each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. So whatever gift we have has been given to us to serve others. This is not about me. It's about serving others. And so we get partial lists of the gifts. What are the gifts? What are the gifts? Well, you get a partial list of gifts back in, say, Romans chapter 12, and also in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and also in Ephesians chapter 4, and then here in 1 Peter chapter 4, you get the partial lists of these gifts that are given. They're important. Every one of them is important. But the thing to remember is, those are partial lists of gifts. That's not the whole list, and all of the gifts are meant to serve the church. And that service is so much more than what goes on inside this building. Maybe you have a wonderful gift to teach Bible class, or maybe you have the gift of working in the nursery with small children, and they love you and you love them. Maybe you have the gift of preaching, or leading singing, or serving on the table. If those aren't your gifts, you don't need to sit there and say, well, I don't have any of those gifts. There's nothing for me to do around here. The gifts are very, very much larger than what goes on inside this building. Service to God is more than what happens here. And the early church, the earliest church, when they heard passages like 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 10, they didn't think about service in a worship service inside a church building because they didn't have any church buildings. What they heard was, care for the church. The church is the people, not the location. So when they realized they had gifts, those gifts were meant to serve the church. And each one administering his gift, faithfully administering the grace of God, in whatever form it is. That's their responsibility, to serve the church. God has confidence in us, or he wouldn't give these gifts to us. He has confidence, so he gives us the gifts. And so you need to cherish your own gift and not be jealous of somebody else's gift. Let's go back and take a look. I want to just point out a couple of verses here in chapter 37 again, Genesis 37. We're still dealing with Joseph and his dysfunctional family and the gift that God has given him. If you skip down, let's take a look at verse 8, which we've already read. His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he said. Skip down to verse 11. His brothers were jealous of him. He's got some kind of gift and they're jealous. Skip down to verse 19 and 20. And see what it says here. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. Now here, they're out in the field and they see Joseph approaching. Oh, he's easy to spot. He looks like a parade coming to him. He's got that beautiful robe on that means he's not actually going to do any work. So they see him at a long distance and they say, "Well, here comes that dreamer. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." Well, his brothers are very jealous of Joseph. His dreams offended them. That's not right. He shouldn't have something greater than we have. The problem is they never stopped to realize that they too had a bright future. They never realized that God was involved with them. I mean, you think about who these guys are. One of them is named Levi. Levi becomes the patriarch of all of the priests of God. The whole worship of God in the Old Covenant is given over to the tribe of Levi. Joseph has a gift, certainly, but Levi has a huge gift. And what about Judah? Judah has a gift. Through the line of Judah, the Messiah himself will come. And the kings of the southern kingdom came from Judah. They have a wonderful gift there. Benjamin, the youngest of all, who's not even involved in this. Benjamin is the ancestor of the first king of Israel. They all had gifts. I don't care which one of them you want to point to. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Gad, Naphtali, Dan, Asher, Benjamin. Doesn't matter. They all had a bright future. They all had a bright future. But all they can focus on is this problem with Joseph. And they envied that. God had a plan for the whole nation. They just couldn't see that they were involved in that. I think that's pretty much the situation in Corinth. You think about all the arguing and fussing, the competition, the rivalry that went on in the church in Corinth, and how some people had this gift and some people had that gift, and these people thought their gift was better than that gift. And they thought then they were better people than those people over there. And there's arguing and fussing and fighting. And then they divide up into camps. Well, I'm with this guy. Well, I'm solidly behind this guy. And others are sitting there, "I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm with Jesus." And you have all this rivalry and competition that's going on there. And they're not thinking about the gifts. Some of the gifts are thought to be bigger and more spiritual than other gifts. And the result in that was just bitter chaos in this church. And Paul writes to them to straighten them out and try pull them back together into one church. What is Paul? I'm nothing. I'm a servant. What is Apollos? We're nothing. It's God who makes everything grow. This is the church of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's not Paul's church or Peter's church or Apollos' church or any other person. It belongs to Jesus. The reason that that is so tremendously important, that we cherish our own gift and not be jealous or envious of somebody else's gift, is because all the gifts are needed in the church, every single one of them. Over in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 13, and 14 all go together. It talks about abuses of these gifts, especially in worship. But I just want you to notice 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 12. As Paul writes to the Corinthian church, he says, "The body is a unit, though it is made up of many parts, and though its parts are many, they form one body, so it is with Christ." Count them, one body. So it is with Christ. Other versions will say the body is made up of many members. Same thing, parts, got your fingers, got your toes, got your earlobes, and so on. This is the earliest use of this metaphor of the body. And it's so powerful and so important that all these club organizations and social organizations have grabbed that metaphor and used it. You know, we're all one here now. We are individual members. And so you have membership in a club because it says something very, very powerful about being united in one body. And that's the point that Paul is trying to get across to the Corinthians here. You're one body. All the gifts are necessary in the body. There's diversity, but there's unity. We need you here. I don't see God ever giving useless or optional gifts in His church. Your gift is to lead worship in some way, and your gift is to teach in some way. Your gift is to be an ornament on the shelf in God's house. That's not happening. God doesn't give these gifts for us just to be decorations. He gives gifts for us to work and to serve among His people. And I can't, when I stop to think about this, I just can't avoid thinking about this conversation that Lee Iacocca had with Vince Lombardi at a dinner party about how to have a winning team. And Vince Lombardi said you need three things to have a winning team. So the first thing you need is good players. You had to have good players who know their position and can play the position and they're able to do their job. You got to have good players. The second thing you need is good discipline, he said. The player has to stay home and play his position. You can't have a bunch of prima donnas running around on the field. The third thing he says is you need brotherly love, a spirit of teamwork there. But I want to focus on that idea of discipline. You got to stay home in your position, play your position. You can't have a bunch of prima donnas running around on the field. Every one of those guys is important out there, and they got to stay where they've been put. And they have to do their job because at some point it's going to become critical to the success of the team that they were there doing their job. That's our situation within the church. We each have gifts. God has given us gifts and we need to stay home and put the gift to work. Because at some point it's going to be absolutely critical that we do that. The brothers' jealousy of Joseph led them to commit a terrible crime against Joseph. And yet God had a plan for them too. We don't need to be jealous of somebody else's gift. We need to cherish the gift that God has given us and put it to work. In fact, that's the third point of this whole thing. When we use our gifts properly, God's cause is advanced. You've got to go all the way over to chapter 50 for this one. Let's go to the very end of Genesis. Genesis chapter 15. Just look at verses 15 to 21. As it's all wound down, all the dreams have come true. Joseph has been sold into slavery in Egypt, and he becomes a powerful man there. And the years of famine come, and he advises Pharaoh and interprets Pharaoh's dream. Remember, he's got a gift from God to do that. So he can interpret Pharaoh's dream and warn him that a big famine is coming on, and they make all their proper preparations. And then by hook and crook, he gets his family down there to protect them. You know how the story goes. Exciting. If you don't know the story, read the whole thing. It's really interesting. You get down to chapter 50, though, and Jacob dies. And now the brothers are really tugging at their collars. Oh, boy, we're in trouble now because nobody can stop Joseph. He's the second most powerful man in the whole of Egypt. And so in verse 15, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him?" So they sent word to Joseph saying, "Your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you were to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father." When their message came to him, Joseph wept. His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. "We're your slaves," they said. But Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then don't be afraid. I'll provide for you and your children." And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph had used his gift for God's purpose. He revealed the future to Pharaoh. They took all the necessary precautions. He secured the safety of his own family, got Jacob and the rest of them to come down to Egypt where they could be fed and cared for and sheltered from the depredations of their neighbors. And so he cared for them that way. And what Joseph learned is the gift that he had wasn't about him. It never was about him. It was about serving others. He had learned humility. You know how you learn humility? By being humiliated. By being humbled. And Joseph had learned in all those intervening years that it wasn't about him. It was about God's purpose. And that's what they needed to learn in the church at Corinth also. They needed actually to put those things to work. The proper use of those gifts that God had given was to build up the church. It was all about building up the church. And if they used those gifts in the proper way, the church grew and it expanded and more people were saved. Even non-Christians were convicted of the truth of the gospel when they used God's gifts in the right way. And they came to realize that the only glory that counts is God's glory. And that's what we heard also in the reading. 1 Corinthians 3. It's not about Apollos, not about Paul. It's just about God who makes things grow. In Romans chapter 12, Paul says something very much like that, that we're called to use our gifts, to actually put them into operation. Verses 6 through 8 in Romans chapter 12, he says, "We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it's serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it's leadership, let him govern diligently. If it's showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully." You know, the truth of the matter is, I don't think we're very inclined to get involved in a big fuss like the Corinthian church over whose gift is better, my gift better than your gift. I don't think we're inclined to do that. I don't think there's a lot of competition, rivalry, jealousy, envy going on with the various gifts available within this church. I don't think it's very likely. I think what's far more likely is that we're likely to neglect the gift that God has given us and just refuse to participate. I have a gift, but I'm not going to use it. The rest of you guys, you know, you can do that. You can lead the singing. I could, but I'm not going to. I could do Wednesday devotionals, but that's a lot of work. I don't think I'll do that. See, I don't think we're likely to get into competition and rivalry. I think we're just more likely to do nothing. And you have to ask the question, what could God do here if we put His gifts to work in the church? What could He do here? I really appreciate the fact that Jack, in his prayer this morning, prayed for all those servants in the background. Did you notice that? I always think that that's touching. All those servants in the background who are doing the work and will of the Lord, and they're making good things happen, and they don't get the applause, and they don't get the accolades, and people don't point to them and say, wow, they're really important, but they are terribly important. And they're working so hard without a whole bunch of credit. What could God do here if we put His gifts to work? In the story of Joseph, he learned that the favorite kid was only one of the favorite kids. God actually loves all of His children. He had gifts for all of them, and He had a bright future for all of them. It was a lot brighter than they thought. But in fulfilling his ministry from God, actually Joseph learned something else. He also learned that the way to break that cycle of hatred and jealousy and competition, rivalry and envy that had been passed down to him from his father and from his mother and from all of his brothers, all that family message that had come down over and over and over again about competition and rivalry and jealousy, the way to break that cycle is through grace and forgiveness. And so his brothers came to him and said, "Please forgive." And Joseph said, "Am I in the place of God? You think I'm going to execute wrath on you? You are terribly mistaken." In the passing years, everything had changed. Joseph had changed. He wasn't the brash youngster bragging about how God always liked him best. And the brothers were no longer consumed by envy and jealousy. They're mostly consumed by guilt over what they'd done. Everybody had changed. And it was time to look forward and not back. So Joseph used his gift, and we have absolutely no idea how many people were saved. Not only the Egyptians were saved, and Jacob was saved, and his family was saved, but there were many other foreigners who came to Egypt to buy grain, and grain was available in that terrible 7-year famine because Joseph had used his gift, and we have no idea how many people were saved. What might God do if we use the gifts that He's given us? How many might be saved if we just use the gifts that He's already given to us? The greatest gift that He's given us is His own Son. We might have the gift of working in the nursery and loving those children, have them love us. We might have the gift of teaching Bible classes or leading singing. We might have those gifts. We might have many other gifts. But what could God do if we use those gifts? Of all the gifts that God has given us, the greatest gift is His Son, Jesus. You see, God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever should believe in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. You know the passage. You memorized it long ago. The greatest gift of all is Jesus. If you're not a Christian, you need to come to Him and obtain the salvation that God wants you to have. The greatest gift of all, life eternal with Him. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, you're willing to confess His name before men, to repent of sin, stop doing the wrong thing, start doing the right thing in its place. If you're willing to be immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins and raise them to walk in newness of life, you can do that today and obtain the greatest gift of all, a right relationship with God. If you're not a Christian, you can do that. If you are a Christian, if you've made the covenant with Christ in the past, but you haven't really been doing His will and you haven't used His gifts at all, you need to repent. You need to stop doing what is wrong, that is to neglect the great gift that God has put in your hands. Start doing what is right. Exercise that gift in service to God. If you need to respond publicly, we're going to sing an invitation song and give you an opportunity to do that right now while we stand and sing.